I think everyone has to take some time sometimes to just think, you know what, there were certain times in my life where it sucked. It really sucked. But look where I am now. So I think you're right. And I'm sure you've got things in your life as well where you look back and go, but you know what, that was a bad time. But I have grown as a person and in my life and everything else that's come on. I mean, you know, you've got kids and a wife and things, and you must think the same thing at times. And I think that's a valuable thing to do.
Hi, and welcome to Podcaster Stories. Each episode, we'll have a conversation with podcasters from across the globe and share their story, what motivates them, why they started a show, how they grew the show, and more. We'll also talk about their personal lives and some of the things that have happened or made them the person they are today. And now here's your host, Danny Brown. Hi, and welcome to another episode of Podcast Stories, where we get to meet the people behind the voices of the shows we listen to. This week, we've got Paul Sutton, who's a fashionista extraordinaire, and we'll talk about his Paisley shirts, probably, because I normally give him a lot of grief about that. Paul's the host of the Digital Download Podcast, which is a show about digital communication strategy, social media marketing, and the internet. So, Paul, welcome to the show. How about you introduce yourself and your podcast?
Yeah, thank you. I've been running my podcast now for 3 years or so. Like you say, it's about digital communications and strategy, and I cover a whole wide range of things, really, from, I don't know, the future of the internet to social media tactics to, you know, the mental health impacts of the internet, all sorts of stuff. I've been working in marketing communications for 20-odd years now. I'm really getting old. It's my 50th birthday next year.
You're younger than me.
Not by much, I don't think. Anyway, I've been working in that for 20 years, the last six of which have been as an independent consultant, which I love doing. I have to say, given what's happened in the last year, it's probably, in my view, it's probably the best sort of thing you could have been doing, because, you know, I've always had control over my own destiny for the last 6 years anyway. So things like working from home and everything else that's been going on are kind of second nature anyway, really.
And you mentioned, obviously, the podcast has been gone, I think, since 2018 now, at the beginning of 2018. Mm-hmm. And so how did you come up with the show idea? Was it something that just came naturally, or was it something you saw an opportunity for? Or
I had been kind of badgered about starting a podcast for a year or two. I was aware at the time that podcasts were kind of taking off and listenership had started to grow quite rapidly because of everything, you know, around 4G and mobile devices and all that sort of stuff, which we kind of know about. And people kept saying to me I should start a podcast, but I didn't know anything about it, like literally nothing. I didn't know what went into it. I didn't know the editing, the publishing process, nothing. And so I started it really as kind of an experiment to learn about podcasting. And I started it with no expectation that it would last more than one season. I did a season of 10 shows, I think it was, in the first lot. And it really was a case of, well, let's do 10, see how it goes. And like I said, I had no expectation it would go any further. But 3 years later, here we are.
And as you mentioned, you had no expectations, you know, for it to maybe go beyond the initial 10 episodes.
Yeah.
So knowing that you might just have 10 episodes, what were the original goals for the show and how's that maybe changed over time?
The original goals, I think thinking back, I wanted to cover 10 quite different areas of digital communications at that time. So if I remember rightly, my first 10 episodes included things like, I don't know, how to make the best use of photography for social media, for example. And I did one on users on the internet and how they were changing. I did one where I interviewed the CIPR president at that time about what she was expecting to come through in the next year in the PR. I did one with our friend Ginny Dietrich. I basically pulled on a lot of favours in those first 10 to get me up and running. And the way I saw it, if I was interviewing out of those 10 episodes, maybe if maybe half or six or seven of those were with people I knew really well, then it felt like the risk of doing it, if there is such a thing, was minimised. 3 years later, I think of it very differently. I come up with episode ideas just depending on what I'm thinking about as much as anything. I don't have any goals in terms of when I start a season. I don't have any goals of I want to cover X, Y, Z, you know, all these different topics. I start off with four or five in mind and kind of let it evolve from there. So I probably approach it in a very different way than you know, when I started out.
Mm. And you mentioned Ginny Dietrich there, and she's been on now about 3-4 times, I think, at last count. So how much is she paying you?
She has been on quite a lot, I have to admit. The reason I get her back on quite a lot is purely because those episodes seem to get a good response. So don't tell her that.
Yeah, I'm going to cut that from the edit of the show.
Absolutely.
Yeah, she's not getting to know that. As you mentioned, you interview guests and they share their thoughts on how listeners can, say, improve their digital communications or, you know, topics to do with that. So you mentioned photography and social media, etc. But you also have guests on, possibly yours truly, that tear the industry a new one.
Yeah.
So do you have a preference for either? Or how do you find the reaction to these kind of different episodes?
No, I love having different opinions on it. I really do. And I think you were the first person to come on my podcast who did that. And I loved the fact that show went out, because if I think back to my first season, and like I say, using the photography one as an example, because that's what jumped to mind, fine, it was an okay episode, but there was nothing particularly challenging about that, I don't think. And I like the shows to, or at least some of the shows, to challenge people. And, you know, you were the first one that did that, and I've had others on as well where I have just thought this is, it's almost reflecting what's going on in my head, and having a third party to reinforce some opinions that I maybe have, I think is great. And I love the fact that it challenges people. I love the fact that you tend to get quite a good response from those sorts of things. Some of the most listened to episodes I've done have been where people have expressed opinions or said things that are a bit more controversial, and to me that's a great thing.
Do you ever find, on that topic, do you ever find that some guests might not want to come on to offer, say, a contrary view because they're fearful of the blowback they might get either online or even from, say, clients or such as?
I'm trying to think, have people ever, I suppose in 3 years I've probably only had maybe 3 or 4 people turn down the opportunity to come on. When you get someone on who you think is going to be, I suppose when if I think about the more controversial ones, I'm inviting people on who I know are gonna be prepared to voice an opinion, so I'm not going to try and trap them into saying something. They know what they're coming on the show for, and it's all, you know, we've discussed it previously. So if I'm approaching those sort of subjects, I'm talking to people who I know have those opinions anyway, you know?
No, that makes sense. Yeah, I was just curious. I know sometimes, at least depending on our podcast show topics, it can be harder to get guests to speak about a certain topic. And I'm just curious, especially with the, you know, with social media making it so easy to get your rake out of a great pitchfork. Why would you get a rake to someone? That's a very British thing. I'll take my garden rake to you for the crowd. So you'd mentioned earlier about you'd started a podcast. I guess people were mentioning it to you back in 2018. Mm. Now, I know, like, today a lot of communicators are talking about the podcast boom today. Yeah. And how businesses can take advantage of it. But as I mentioned, back in May 18, you actually published an episode about this very topic and how to take advantage of podcasting for PR, business, etc. Mm-hmm. So what was it that you saw then that people, like fellow peers, didn't, and now they're sort of seeing that, if you like?
I guess that was that first season that I did. So I did this season of 10 or 11 episodes. Like I say, no expectations. I did it to learn about podcasting. Having done that, the response I had to those 10 or 11 episodes was far beyond anything I have probably ever done in terms of personal marketing. it you know, I mean, I've been blogging for 10 years before that, and I think that the blogging side of things I'd become bored of. I was running out of ideas, things to talk about, and it was just this whole new format. And those, that first season just lit a light bulb. It made me think, do you know what? Everyone should be getting involved in this. I think actually things are different now. This is 3 years on, we're talking. Mm. And there have been so many podcasts, in my niche anyway. I mean, you know, across the board, but in my niche, there are so many podcasts launched nowadays that talk about, I don't know, PR and comms and what have you. And a lot of them are just, I think, a bit vanilla. And in that environment, I think it's more difficult to get cut through. So I am pleased that I started it 3 years ago, because I wouldn't put anyone off starting a podcast now at all, because I think it's a great format. But I think it's more challenging now than it was 3 years ago.
Yeah, and especially I know there's been a lot of talk online with the likes of Clubhouse and Twitter Spaces, etc.
Yeah.
Almost taking it away from like traditional podcasting, if you like, into this newer medium. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays along. Have you been messing about with Clubhouse at all?
Well, I'm an Android user, so
me too.
I don't get the privilege. But even though I haven't used it, I actually don't believe the hype around Clubhouse and Twitter Spaces. I just don't buy into it, because maybe this comes from being a podcaster. I think I don't see it as a competitor to podcasting at all. I think they're entirely different things. I think, although it's quite brave and novel to have sort of a real-time media format, we are in an on-demand world. And I can't imagine ever... Not ever, I shouldn't say, that's a bit strong. But I can't imagine really using that media format once the novelty had worn off. I really can't. Because, for example, I know someone who logged into a Clubhouse chat a couple of weeks ago, and she set an alarm at 3 o'clock in the morning in the UK so she could join a chat that was happening in the States. And that kind of made me rethink that, do you know what, this whole real-time thing, yes, it's novel, but I just don't, once that novelty's over, are you really going to bother be doing that stuff? I don't know. Maybe people have a different opinion, and that is absolutely fine. And I'm trying to get, funnily enough, a podcast about this shortly, because I know people are loving Clubhouse and Twitter Spaces has come along, but I just don't buy into it.
Yeah, it's definitely a different vibe. I like yourself. I'm an Android guy, so I haven't tried it. A lot of my iPhone friends do use it, but the feedback seems to be like this whole, you know, echo chamber again. It's like a lot of marketers talking about marketing, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know. I don't know if we're missing anything, but we're old guys, so what do we know?
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, obviously, you've got a wide variety of guests talking about different topics that are in your space, your niche. So is there anything that you've taken from your guests and implemented in your own life, either personally or professionally?
I'm sure there must. I can't think of anything, you know, off the cuff there, but I'm sure there must be, because, you know, I try and get guests on who I respect. I come up with a topic idea, and the way I run my podcast is to come up with a topic idea and then find a guest who is relevant to that, someone knowledgeable or someone I respect, or, you know, or who's got an opinion. So I'm sure you get pitched, and I get pitched increasingly from outreach people saying, do you want to have such and such a guy on your podcast? I don't think I've ever accepted one of those pitches, because that's not the way I run it. I don't get people on. I address topics. Does that make sense? I don't know if I've explained that properly.
No, that makes perfect sense. And I like the fact that that's coming from a PR professional, because, as you mentioned, it's a lot of pitches that you can sometimes get. And clearly, they've never listened to your show. It's just an excuse to come on, sell a book, sell an online course or whatever. So
yeah.
I like the approach that you're taking there, where it's really knuckling it down.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it works for me. And, you know, it's not for everyone, but it goes back to, you know, we were talking about blogging, and I mean, it was the same thing for blogging, and it still is. I still get pitches for my blog, even though I haven't written anything in 3 years. But, you know, it's the same thing, where PR people are just reaching out to get people featured. And I guess it must work. Otherwise, you know, they wouldn't do it, but who knows?
Now, one of the episodes that really, I mean, you've got a great back catalogue, but one of the episodes that really spoke to me, if you like, was with you and Semple, and how social media has potentially broken us as human beings.
Yes.
And I think especially, you know, at the time that episode was recorded, up to now, do you think much has changed in society since that episode? Do you think we're getting better, or what's your feeling on that?
Oh, that's a big question. I mean, Ewan is someone who, Joe, I've had him on twice now, and he's such a bright guy. You could talk to him for hours, actually. The episode you're referring to was about that. Is social media broken or are people broken? It was his kind of the catch line that intrigued me. Have things changed? I don't think they have, if I'm really honest. I mean, everything that's happened in the world in the last year has moved things on. My personal opinion is it hasn't. All it's done is accelerate things that were happening already. When it comes down to whether social media has changed, I mean, I hear more people taking a step back from it now. And funny enough, talking about Ewan, he's going back to blogging almost. And he's someone, you said, are there people I kind of take things from? That's one of the things that's made me think, well, maybe things are coming in a bit of a circle there. Maybe there's room for blogging again, whereas, you know, like I said, I haven't written anything in 3 years. So I don't know the answer to your question, really. Have things changed? I guess so, but I think it's too early to really know how that's going to wash out.
And on that topic, social media, especially with Facebook especially, is being, you know, hammered recently, yeah, for the amount of stuff that they leave up and then the amount of people that they take down. And it's a weird bias that the stuff that should come down remains up, and the people that are protesting that are the ones that get banned from Facebook for some weird reason. And so because of that, I mean, social media has been blamed for the increase in mental health issues, with depression numbers spiking since 2009-2010, when social media really hit its groove. How much of a part do you feel social media has to play in our mental well-being in general?
This is a really interesting question because, again, going back to my podcast, by the time this comes out, I will have a show out which is about, well, it covers this topic, actually. Someone who's written a book about screen time, and part of what she's written about is the mental health aspects of being online all the time. It was interesting talking to her in that it's kind of unproven, actually. She's done loads of research on this, and it's kind of unproven as to whether using social media a lot causes mental health problems, or whether people with mental health problems just use social media a lot. And when I think about my own habits, I know, for example, if I'm in not such a good mental state, I will view things that I read on social media very negatively. So I will go onto Twitter and read my Twitter stream and think everyone's an idiot. Or I will post things that are negative. And I don't mean to. It's just, it's almost like a barometer I can spot in myself and think, hang on a minute, you've written two or three things recently that are just negative. So I think it's a very complex area, actually, extremely complex. I mean, what do you think? Do you agree with that, or...?
No, I do. It's like you said, it's a weird one. My friend Sam Fiorella, who's a mental health speaker and advocate, he did a mass study about youth, because that's a focus for Sam. It's like youth mental health. And it showed there was a massive spike in youth mental health issues as new platforms came out. So Instagram, Snapchat, WhatsApp. Once these started to come out, you'd see a sort of spike in mental health issues. Now, going back to your question, is that because the kids that had mental health issues were trying out these new apps, and then the usual stuff happens where you get like a troll or a bully or someone on the app, and that cascades into more mental health issues? Mm. Or is it because of the apps themselves? So I'll be interested to A, listen to that episode, and B, read that book, because I think, to your point, there's a huge discussion to be had around the legacy of social media on mental health.
Mm. I agree with you. And another thing that we talked about on this particular episode was how, again, she said it, and I agree with her, that if you're in not such a good place, you'll find yourself just scrolling endlessly through whatever your chosen channel is without actually having any constructive conversation or any conversation whatsoever often. And that doesn't seem like a good thing to me. It's not, you know, I don't see how that can help anyone's mental state to be doing that sort of stuff.
Now, then you pulled back from Facebook. You're only on Messenger now, I believe, unless you've got rid of that as well. But was that one of the reasons you pulled back from social media, or was it to spend more time with family? Or
no, I got sick of Facebook. It's that simple. This is going back, I don't know the exact date. I think it's 2 or 3 years now. Facebook and Instagram, I just got sick of them. And saying about how I view things negatively if I'm in not a great state mentally, it was almost like that, but it had been going on for months. And I was finding what I was reading from people just totally vacuous, of no value to me whatsoever, which I used to love, you know, going back 10 years or whenever. I used to love that stuff, but it just became increasingly vacuous and empty. So I shut down Facebook. Well, I kept my Facebook profile because I do need one for work, for what I do. But I basically pulled back right from it 2 or 3 years ago. Same with Instagram. And Messenger, yeah, I do have a Messenger account. But that's basically to chat to a couple of mates of mine about football, and that's it. I still use Twitter. I still use LinkedIn. But they are professional resources for me. I get professional value from those, which is why I use them. And this is coming from a social media consultant. Well, I do more than that now, but a social media consultant who you would think would be one of the biggest advocates for Facebook and Instagram. So maybe that says something. I don't know.
No, and there's a lot more people. I know we mentioned Ginny earlier. She's only on Facebook at the moment to post a daily update of her COVID situation. So, right. Like with lockdown, she's showing what her family's doing, what her kids doing, what Addie's doing, etc.
Yep.
And she's only doing that once a day. Never comes on either. So I've seen a lot of people take that approach where they're moving back either for personal reasons, you know, wellness reasons, or just like you said, professional, to really focus on the areas that make sense for your business, for example. So yeah. I think, you know, I can see that happening more and more.
Yeah. Do you still use Facebook?
I do. I'm trying to use it less. Like yourself, I have to have a profile there for the work I do.
Yeah.
But apart from that, I spend less time there and maybe probably more time on Twitter now. I've got a good sort of, I'm a craft beer lover, so I've got a good bunch of mates on Twitter in the same sort of niche. So we have a recommendation, blah, blah.
But you gave up Twitter, didn't you, quite a while ago now? Or was that on the marketing side and you've switched your interest across?
Yeah, I did delete my old account because I kept getting tweets from fans of Danny Brown, the rapper, in the US.
Yeah.
And he actually tweeted me a couple of times just to apologise, which was really kind of, he didn't need to do that. But so I deleted that one. That was my old account. And I started a new one maybe a year and a half ago, something like that, 2 years. But that's solely towards sort of fun craft beer stuff and just chit-chat.
Yeah, and
that's fun again. I actually enjoy it. I hated it. Yeah. My marketing one, I hated, because I just, like you mentioned earlier, Paul, vacuous statements, vacuous tweets, vacuous people.
Yeah.
So it's more fun now for sure.
Yeah. And it's because you focused on an interest. And I think I wouldn't be surprised if that's the way social media goes. But then I'm talking very personally there. And I'm always a bit wary of thinking, you know, what I think everyone else thinks, because it's clearly not the case.
Now, speaking of what you think, I know you've been very open about your own issues with mental health and your own journey with mental health, both on your podcast and online, so either on your blog or, you know, on Twitter. Has that been hard to do? Were you ever concerned about what clients or potential clients might think, or what's that been like for you?
Just trying to think the best way of answering that, really. I guess the first time I don't know how you say it, came out as having mental health problems, I was scared shitless, yes. I first wrote it within a blog post, which was about you know, Pink Floyd album The Wall. It was about storytelling, of all things, and about how that record tells a story from beginning to end. And it just happens to be about mental health of the protagonist in it. And as a part of that blog post, I sort of introduced the idea that I had problems. And the response I had from that was just amazing. And shortly after that, maybe, I don't know, 2, 3, maybe 6 months after that, I was invited to talk to the Chartered Institute of Public Relations at one of their events about mental health issues. Now, this is going back, well, I was still working in an agency at that time, so it's over 6 years ago, 6 or 7 years ago. And at that time, no one was talking about this, no one. And so it was scary in a way, but at the same time, I was employed at that time. So it wasn't like I thought I might lose clients. I didn't have, although it got a lot of attention, it wasn't like I thought this is going to do me any harm. And I guess even now, I mean, I don't talk about it so much now, but I do still address it and I'm very open about it. And I've now started to write a monthly sort of email newsletter, if you like, whatever you want to call it. And in last month's, I was talking about, part of what I was talking about was seasonal affective depression, which I get as you know, as a part of this thing that I have. And it was only after I'd sent that, and I was on a Zoom call with a client who I've only had a couple of months, and he mentioned it and said, oh, I read your email and how are you feeling about this and stuff. And it was literally, that was a, oh my God, I've got a client who knows this. But people, from a client perspective, I'm not aware, put it this way, I'm not aware of a single person who has ever stopped working with me or not wanted to work with me because of it. I could be wrong, but I don't think that's the case. If anything, people appreciate the fact that you are a bit vulnerable and a bit open and honest, and especially now because, let's face it, everyone around the world has had a shit time the last year, and just being a bit vulnerable and open and honest and candid about this stuff, I don't think it's a bad thing, personally.
You are seeing more people talk about it, and people that, as you mentioned, that you might be surprised, because I think with social, everybody tends to look at other people's lives and think, oh, that's perfect. You know, John's doing this, Paul's doing this, Jenny's doing this, etc. And we don't get to see that. So it's good to see that people are opening up about it, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I think that the comms industry as well, when you think about it, like PR in particular, can be a very demanding industry. Do you think there's maybe more issues around mental health and burnout, especially, in the PR industry? And if so, what can be done? What have you seen that you think can be done?
Yeah, I mean, I again, this is personal opinion. I don't have anything specific to back this up, but I have long believed that industry itself is rife with mental health problems. And I mean, like I said, I started talking about it 6 or 7 years ago. In the last 6 or 7 years, more and more and more people have talked about it. More studies have been done. You know, they used to say, well, it's sort of 1 in 10 people or 1 in 6 people, and it's now down to sort of 1 in 3 people or 1 in 2 people. So it's almost like people now are prepared to talk about it more than they ever have been.
So we mentioned earlier, you've been at home now for 6, 7 years in your consultancy. So you're pretty much an old pro remote working.
Old, yes.
Well, old and pro. We'll see how this goes out. But I see a lot of people online that have really struggled to adapt to the remote working during COVID. And they can't wait to get back to the office. Do you ever see yourself working in an office again, or are you the homebody now?
God, no. I even before all this happened, the thought of going and working back in an office now fills me with horror. And I know this is partly a personality thing, though, in that I am very happy working at home, by myself. I don't feel the need to be around people all the time. Whereas people with different personality traits, you know, miss that. They miss the hub, the office, the everything that goes on. They miss people. So again, like I said earlier, it's wrong for me to assume what other people might think, but just the if I had to put it this way, if my consultancy went down the pan and I had to get a job and going back and work in an office, I honestly cannot imagine doing that now. I just can't.
No, I hear you. I mean, I've been at home probably for 4 years now, I think, and it's nice to wake up knowing that you can spend breakfast with the kids and ease into the day, as opposed to rushing to get out the door and stuff like that.
Exactly, and it's not like it's all brilliant, because, you know, kids get home at 3:30, whatever it is, and I find it very difficult to work after 3:30. But that's part of adapting. I think when you work at home, you have control over when you work and how you work. So I might get up, I don't know, 6 o'clock in the morning and start working if I've got loads on. Or I might quit at 3:30 and then start working again at 7:30 when the kids go to bed. But more often than not, I just shift my working day around the family so that I am spending a bit more time with them, and I'm not having to rush out the door like you said or rush back. It just suits me so much better to work like that.
So your podcast has been going for 3 years now, and you were, let's say, an early adopter of the podcast space for your industry, at least certainly from the PR leaders that I know. Would you have any piece of advice for new podcasters coming into the space? You'd mentioned it earlier about, you know, you wouldn't want to start one today, but if you were starting one today, what advice would you give?
My advice would be to try and do something different to everyone else. I know that sounds obvious, but what I mean by that is think about your format, because in my space, a lot of the podcasts that have started recently in the last year or so are straight interviews between one person and another, and they all ask similar questions and have similar production values, and it's almost like no one has really thought about it. Well, what I did going back a year, so I'd been going 2 years and done, pretty much hadn't mucked around with the format very much in that time, although I did muck around with putting sound effects in and adding music here and there and just to mix things up, really, and just to experiment. And then last year, I'd been listening to podcasts like Reply All, I think is an amazing podcast, and Science Versus, and some of the Gimlet Media podcasts. And what I love about them is that the formats in them, they don't stick to something formulaic, I guess, each podcast. And I tried to listen to things and think, well, what do I like about each one? And started producing some episodes which are a bit different. And now when I put an episode out, I add a narrative to it. I try, sometimes I have one guest and I record it as an interview, but I will introduce narrative elements to it. So I'm trying to break the format up a little bit. Other times I will introduce three or four guests in a show, and I will write a narrative that joins all of their little bits of conversation together. And it's just, I think anyway, I hope it's interesting and different to the other podcasts in my niche. And that would be my advice to anyone starting a podcast now, is to look at the others in your niche, because there will be them, and try and do something that's just a bit different to them.
No, I love that advice. To your point, I know I see a lot of new podcasters that just want to be the next Joe Rogan. Mm. And you think, well, A, is that really your style? Mm. And B, do you really want to be like Joe Rogan? Yes, he got a huge Spotify deal, but he's also got a lot of people that are coming out against him because of his style and his politics and his views on a bunch of stuff. So, yeah, I think owning your voice, if you like, I don't know if that's even the right description, but I like the fact that you mentioned that you're taking it into a narrative way, because I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I as a PR pro, your goal is to tell your client's story in a way that resonates with the audience. I love that approach.
Yeah, and it's worked well. I mean, whether it's for example, I did an interview last year with Wendy James, who you will remember because you're old enough.
One of my first crushes.
There you go, exactly. And that came about purely because I was thinking, you know, I talked about how I come up with episode ideas for topics, and I was thinking about this idea of people publishing things during lockdown, and had they actually produced the piece of work or just published it, and I happened to spot that she'd released a new album, so I tweeted her and she tweeted me back and we got into a conversation. I got into, you know, eventually got this interview. And what I did, that it would be so tempting with someone who is actually properly famous just to leave it as it is and not cut it up and not mess around with it. But I did the same thing. I added that narrative element, and I think it made the show better for doing that. And so, like I said, I would just encourage people to think differently and not just think a podcast has to be an interview. It can be all sorts of things.
No, and that episode, I loved listening to it when you shared it, because, as I mentioned, Wendy James is one of my first crushes as a teenager.
Yep.
Beautiful, beautiful person. But very outspoken, rightly so.
Yes. And
the topic she spoke about, her sass, just her genuine character came across in the episode. So that was a great episode, Mick.
And that was an interesting one to record, because I had questions around how she was when she was a lot younger, obviously, and about her, like you say, her sass, her energy, the way she rebelled almost against everything. But I didn't want to make assumptions about her, how she is now. But once we started recording, I didn't have to, because, well, you've heard it. She's still outspoken, which was great, you know.
Now, I mentioned at the start of the show your love for Paisley Pattern.
Right.
Which I will haunt you until the day I die. That's not right. I can't haunt you until I die. I will harangue you until I die. But you're well known for your Paisley shirts. So is there something that people that know you might be surprised about to learn about you?
I'm going to correct you on the Paisley shirts, because they're floral shirts.
Oh, my grief.
But, okay, something that people might be surprised about. Okay, so this is quite serious, actually. Going back to the mental health thing, this is something I have not told. I'm trying to think who knows this. Not many people know this. My wife knows it. A few people know it. But here's me being very open and honest here. I was first diagnosed with depression about 15 years ago, maybe. Maybe? Yeah, about 15 years ago. The reason I actually went along to a doctor in the first place was that I found myself thinking about how I might kill myself, which I told you this was dark. Not in the sense that I was going to do it, but I was in London one day, and it must have been for a meeting, because I would have been at an agency at that time. And I was in London standing on a tube platform, and a train was going past, and it just popped in my head, and I thought, quite casually, do you know what, if I was to kill myself, I'd jump in front of a train, because you're not getting out of that. It's not like drowning where someone might save you or whatever. You're going to die. And it was that that it shocked me, actually. And I went to the doctor, I don't know, a couple of days later, and got diagnosed. That's something that people don't know about me. And it's quite dark.
And thankfully, you are still here, obviously.
Yes, absolutely.
But that's important that you went to the doctor, because I feel like a lot of people don't get the help, either through shame or thinking that they're broken because of these thoughts. So, you know, kudos for going to the doctor in the first place. Obviously, you have a family now. Was this before your family? Were you married at the time? Or
no, I was. I know that I have suffered with depression since I was in my mid sort of late teens. Looking back, this is with hindsight. at that time, about 15 years ago, I was going through, if not had just been through, a divorce. And I think that was a kind of, even though it was my decision to get divorced, and I separated from my then wife, and I think any time you do anything like that, it doesn't mean it doesn't affect you. So I think there were certain things going on at that time that just triggered something. It's difficult to say exactly, but triggered something. I don't know. I was having a difficult time at work as well, because the agency I was working with just weren't that supportive of what I was going through. And I think it was just one thing on top of another, and something happened. Something just ticked over, and I went and got help.
And like I say, I'm glad you did. But it's good to see the growth of Julie, because I know when you were on Facebook, I used to love seeing pictures of you with your wife. It's Michelle, right?
It is, yes. Yeah.
It is. So Michelle and the kids, and it was always like just a really, solid, happy family. So it's good to see that sort of, and I'm probably saying the wrong thing here, I apologise, but it's good to see that growth from that dark time, or that potential dark time, to where you are today.
Yeah, I don't think that's the wrong thing to say. I think you're right. I mean, we've been married now for, I've got a tattoo on my arm with the date on, and every time I have to think when I got married, I have to look at it. We've been married since 2009. We've got three kids. Like we were talking before we started recording, I've just moved to this beautiful old house, and I think everyone has to take some time sometimes to just think, you know what? There were certain times in my life where it sucked. It really sucked. But look where I am now. So I think you're right. And I'm sure you've got things in your life as well where you look back and go, but you know what? That was a bad time. But I have grown as a person and in my life and everything else that's come on. I mean, you've got kids and a wife and things, and you must think the same thing at times. And I think that's a valuable thing to do.
Well, I hear you in that, because I'm just glad that I no longer have to be in competition with Ginny for the Ad Age 150 list. The pressure of that time was just scary. But yeah, I hear you, mate. I can completely hear you. So Paul, this has been an absolute blast. I've really enjoyed chatting with you today. And I could quite easily, if this was a Joe Rogan show, I could quite easily speak for another 2 hours. I'd have to crack open a beer and enjoy that with you. For people that want to connect with you, listen to your podcast, check out what you do, or even tweet you on Twitter about, Paisley, floral, floral shirts. Where's the best place to find you and connect with you online?
Yeah, well, other than the podcast, which obviously you have to go and listen to, Twitter's probably the best place to find me. My Twitter handle is @ThePaulSutton.
Awesome. And I'll be sure to leave the links to the podcast and Twitter and a good fashion designer in the show notes. So if you're listening to this and your favourite app is normal, just check the show notes as usual. The links will be there for Paul. So again, Paul, I appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
This has been Podcaster Stories. If you enjoyed this week's episode, hop on over to podcasterstories.com and you can sign up for the free newsletter and catch up on old episodes, or listen on your favourite podcast apps, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more. Until the next time, take care and stay safe.